Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. High school graduation time is just around the corner. For Native American students in New Mexico, graduation rates are lower than the state average. As a part of our series on graduation rates in Native America, we'll explore the efforts to help Native students succeed in high school. After the news, we'll share a conversation with educators and stakeholders about graduation rates. That's next, after National Native News. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. 15 people are being indicted in South Dakota for the illegal trafficking of hundreds of migratory birds. Officials with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service say it's one of the largest cases of bird trafficking they've uncovered. Lee Strubinger reports.
Authorities are releasing the names of 15 individuals who are charged with trafficking eagles and other migratory birds. The indictments are a result of a 2-year investigation into bird trafficking. They say roughly 250 eagles and over 100 hawks and owls have been trafficked during this time. Randy Seiler is the U.S. attorney for South Dakota. He says this was an illegal black market trafficking of eagles and eagle parts, like feathers, talons, and beaks, for profit.
There was no cultural sensitivity. There was no spirituality. There was no tradition in the manner in which these defendants handled these birds. It basically was a chop shop for eagles. They had eagle feathers stuffed in garbage bags, in Walmart bags, blood all over, transported them in various vehicles and coolers.
Seiler says the defendants in the case are both Native and non-Native. He says he also expects federal charges against the defendants. Dan Rollins is an assistant special agent with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He says bird trafficking is happening across the country and into Canada.
Although the scope of today's announcement and indictments is South Dakota, there has been information and spin-off cases because of this one in other parts of the country as well. So this is not a localized problem. It's a national problem.
Rollins says traffickers are selling these birds for anywhere from $1,000 to $1,200. Initial appearances for the defendants are set for May 1st in Rapid City. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Indigenous people from around the world are marking the 10th anniversary of the adoption of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples as they meet this week in New York at the UN. Native leader Willie Littlechild from Canada is reflecting on the decades of work to bring Indigenous rights into the international arena.
It was not till 1977 when the first delegation in the modern era went to Geneva. I was in that delegation. So for me, this is approaching 40 years of work on the UN Declaration. So you can imagine how tremendously happy I feel about reaching a milestone such as a decade on the UN Declaration.
Littlechild says some of the requests and justice seeking of Indigenous people include treaty rights, spiritual rights, and environmental protection. The non-binding declaration establishes a framework of standards for the well-being and rights of Indigenous people worldwide. Canada was among countries to first vote against the declaration, but later gave its support. First Nations leaders in Canada say the declaration is essential for reconciliation and nation building between Indigenous people and the government. Advocates are exploring ways to improve the health of young Native people through physical fitness and nutrition. The Nota Begay Third Foundation is helping lead the way. President Justin Heneman says reducing childhood obesity and diabetes is a priority.
And so we start with at a young age thinking about these issues, and we recognize that unfortunately so many of our young people, particularly in the state of New Mexico and really around the country, are disproportionately affected by the issue of obesity. And so it's an issue that eventually affects us down the road and leads to many other diseases that, frankly, are preventable.
The foundation is hosting a Healthy Kids, Healthy Futures event this week in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by BNSF Railway Company's STEM scholarships for business, mathematics, natural and physical sciences, technology, engineering, education, medicine, or health administration. Info available at aises.org/scholarships.
Support by Bears Ears National Monument, created to honor tribes and protect traditional access. More information, including the latest news about the monument, at protectbearsears.org. O-R-G.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Today we'll continue our ongoing conversation about high school graduation rates for Native students. In New Mexico, graduation rates average 71%. But public education department numbers show the rate for Native students is only 66%. This percentage is even lower within the city of Albuquerque. This hour, we're going to share with you a conversation among educators, stakeholders, and what it means to help Native students succeed. For this program, we're working with New Mexico PBS in Albuquerque to give you a glimpse of what some of the challenges and promises are when it comes to helping high school students cross the finish line. This discussion is also part of the American Graduate Public Media Initiative. National Native News host and producer Antonia Gonzalez sat down with community leaders and an educator to hear what they feel leads Native students to success as well as keep them from it. This conversation first aired on the public affairs show New Mexico In Focus on New Mexico PBS.
I'm joined here today by three guests, Derek Linty, who's New Mexico State Representative, and Juan Rey Abeda, who's Isleta Pueblo and is a tribal council member, and Glenaba Martinez, who is with the University of New Mexico College of Education. Thank you all for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
And Glenaba, tell us, what does Native student success look like to you?
Well, actually, it's interesting you're asking me. I just finished a lecture talking about that. Native student success to me means that Native students are able to understand their core values as a Native person, whether they're one of the 23 nations in New Mexico or elsewhere, but that they understand the core values, they can speak and understand their language, can communicate effectively in the Native language, that they are full participants in their cultural activities at home, and understand their obligations to community. And at the same time, they are also someone who has acquired the skills and knowledge that that they feel that they would want to pursue in terms of a profession or a vocation of some sort. To me, it's really understanding, navigating the different skill sets and forms of knowledge.
And what about you, Juan Rey?
Native American educational success. I agree with a lot with what Ms. Martina has says, and to grow upon that a little bit, you know, I like to see Native American students who go out there, find the tools in the world, and then come back home and figure out how to apply those tools. Not how we would in American society, but how do we apply these tools and adopt them to who we are as Native Americans and figure out how to grow our own tools or adapt them or make hybrids, but to create what we need with our Native American students, which is tribal leaders. And we need them to be warriors, but we need them to be warriors now with education. We need lawyers, we need doctors. We need these future leaders to come back home and to really embolden our sovereignty on our reservations. And that's where I see Native American educational success in the long-term goal and the vision.
And as a tribal leader yourself, how do you see your impact in that?
As a tribal leader, I try to do the hardest thing there is to do, which is just try to lead by example. Take every day as a learning experience. Take every mistake as a lesson to learn from. And, you know, you try to promote that in your community so that your community knows that everyone's not perfect and that they can make mistakes And it's not about making the mistake, but how you get back up and how you carry yourself and how you learn from those mistakes. And so I think as a tribal leader, it's very hard to be a politic. And I don't like the word politic. Because politics, they just talk about money. And tribal leaders, they talk about the problems and problem solving. And that's where I'm headed. And that's how I try to make my change, is ideologically, but maybe spreading a message that will change people's hearts to make them want to do better in their communities.
And we also have a political person with us as well. So what does it look like to you? What is, and your role as a politician, what does it look like to you to have Native student success?
I don't know if I necessarily like the word politician either. I don't consider myself a politician, but to answer your question, I still am of the opinion that it takes a village to raise a child. And in our instances in New Mexico, it takes tribes to raise a child. And in my world, student success, Native student success, does incorporate that it takes a village. It's going to take the immediate family at home. It's going to take the immediate vicinity of the folks that live around the community, extended family, tribal leaders. Once you get out of that realm, then you look to schools, school districts, the teachers, the administrators. Then you move up the chain to policymakers in the hopes that they are allocating the funds appropriately, that they are making the right decisions on behalf of their Native students in hopes that they'll succeed. And if all of those things can come together, success is then laid out for the Native kid, and it's upon them then to just take all those tools that they have with them and hopefully follow a path and become successful.
And do you see school districts in New Mexico meeting that need?
There are some. There are absolutely some school districts that are stepping up to the plate, that are making those conscious decisions, those small changes in priorities and how they spend money, how they utilize fundings that they receive federally or through the state to ensure that like I said, funds are being appropriated to, whether it be culturally competent or culturally relevant, experiences like language programs or like other efforts that they have in regards to how a Native student will succeed in a public school forum. There are also other examples down the way, but unfortunately, Native students still stagger far behind other ethnicities in regards to success in the public school arena.
And Glenaba, in your research, looking at what we're talking about and when it comes to even looking at these statistics about Native students in different areas and compared to their counterparts, what do you see needs to be done when it comes to either programming or policy?
Well, I think when you look at, like, for example, in today's Albuquerque Journal, there are two articles related to Native American student achievement. And what's concerning is the fact that the assessments that they use, we have to question whether or not they're authentic assessments. Are they truly testing what students know? And then the other concern about it is the fact that I wonder about what a student has to, the compromise that takes place for a student to be successful using Western constructions of assessment. For example, oftentimes you'll have test items, verbal test items, for example, in the SAT or ACT exams, college entrance exams, that are looking for a specific type of content knowledge, which may well be complementary of what that Native student may know as a Native person who comes from Taos Pueblo, for example, but maybe that particular concept runs contrary to how they experience it as a Native person growing up at Taos Pueblo. So my concern is about assessment, but I believe that right now the policies that we have, I think we have good intentions. We have a lot of good people working hard at the 23 school districts as well as at the different levels from national level down to local levels, with as well as in the state legislature. But I'm a little concerned about the executive branch with the executive branch using veto power over some key legislation that would have helped our Native students in terms of programming. So when I think about educational achievement, I think about curriculum, what counts as knowledge and whose interests are served with that knowledge base. I think about policy, and I think about what are the policies in the school, all the way from extracurricular activity participation to school attire and all the different things of the daily lived experiences of being a Native student, to assessment and what counts as assessment and what are people looking at. And I think that we are in a current state of high-stakes testing, and I'm very concerned that the things that programs like native language instruction that Christine Sims has with the Native Language Center at UNM, I'm afraid that some of that may become marginalized in the interest of trying to get students to do well on the PARC or the SBA or any of the other assessments that they use in the districts.
And Derek, she had mentioned, Glenaba had mentioned a bill, which was your bill.
Right. Oh, was it your bill?
Can you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about that?
House Bill 484 was a bill that I worked on with some of my counterparts in the Democratic caucus, but one that I sponsored alone simply because it was near and dear to my heart, because I was that Native student that went to the public school that saw things and experienced things that are still going on today in regards to how Native students achieve in public school forums. And so House Bill 484's intent was to simply bring together a method, an accountability system, a systematic way to achieve certain goals to help Native students succeed. And what that meant was that they utilize the federal funding that each school district in the 23 school districts identified as historically having Native American students, how they can utilize that federal funding differently. Not necessarily requesting new funding, but how they can prioritize how they utilize that funding for whether it be culturally relevant programs like language, mm-hmm. or other places to where Native students are lacking far behind other ethnicities, like math, like science, like reading, to ensure that they can escape being that low totem pole statistic and move their way up. And so the measure behind House Bill 484 was simply to utilize that federal funding differently. And unfortunately, 2 weeks ago, it was vetoed by our governor, Governor Martinez, to which she identified my legislation as an unfunded mandate. Unfortunately, she did not see the goal and the relevancy that my counterparts in the legislature on both sides of the aisle, both Republican and Democrat, found the legitimacy and found it relevant that this is a good piece of legislation to which in the House, it passed unanimously. In the Senate, I think there was probably about 5 votes that were in the opposition. But at the end of the day, we had a strong showing of support on behalf of Native American students in this state. And unfortunately, it'll have to wait another couple of years before I can run that again. But believe you me, is that we're going to push it, and we're going to make sure that our students, our Native students, will succeed.
And to piggyback on that one, Ray, of making sure Native students succeed if something, you know, if the funding's not there or if the program isn't there, how important is community and family? And talk a little bit about how you see that playing into Native student success.
It's the core of the core. I mean, Representative Lenti hit on, you know, the core. And I think also Ms. Martinez hit about the core. But that's the core. And what we're finding is that core is being deteriorated. And when you look at a socio-ecological model of that core and, you know, your levels of support that ripple out, it's supposed to be from the individual to sometimes the family member to the larger family to your clan to your community, and then eventually ripples out to the legislature positions and how you make laws to protect your community. What I'm seeing in my community, and what I'm kind of seeing in a lot of the places, is that core is no longer there. And sometimes an individual's first line of support is sometimes the organization, is sometimes JOM, is sometimes Indian Education. The first level of support for some people is sometimes going to their tribal council leader rather than trying to figure out the pieces in between and actually making a structure that works. So if the core is not there, and people are bypassing the core, then we have a system that's out of whack. And to me, that's what I'm kind of seeing is that, and especially in tribal communities, and I can't speak to all tribal communities, I only know my own tribal community and when I see it. But I think to restore that model and to become more dependent on that model incorporates teaching core values in your family, incorporates talking with your elders and your family to know your history, know where you're coming from, know the reasons why you do things. Reaching out to your programs in your community. We have a lot of programs in Isleta Pueblo. And, you know, sometimes it's hard for community members sometimes to even reach into those programs. But I don't know what the reasons why either. Sometimes they're busy with their own life. Sometimes everyone's selling away their destiny to work a 9-to-5 to earn a paycheck. And again, everything seems to be tied to the economy. But coming from my perspective as a tribal leader and someone that wants something good for my community, money is not solving any problem anywhere. It all starts with the individual at that center of that core, what's in their heart, what's their core values, and amplifying those to get more people to stand firm together, to build a community, and to repair ourselves. Money is not going to do it. The United States government took away our rights a long time ago. We've been fighting 500 years to still get them back. So that system's not working. And we could look back 500 years and say it's not going to work. So as a tribal leader, that's one of the main things I need to do is repair the core. And then we start fixing our communities.
And Glenna, you're shaking your head listening to what Juan Ray has to say. As an educator and somebody who's worked in the field for a long time, what needs to be done for Native students to inspire and empower them and get them to cross the graduation line?
Well, I think that's a very important question to ask, and I think that we could ask it at the individual level. There may be some students who need that family support, or there may be some students who need that motivation from their teachers. For some students, it's participating in interscholastic sports or extracurricular activities that somehow enrich their experiences. For some students, it's about setting goals post-secondary education that inspire them to do things. For some people, it's this true love that you're talking about, this true commitment to your community, and you're saying, you're answering the question, what can I do? What will be my contribution to my community? So you have to have some kind of extrinsic and intrinsic motivation, and that motivation may be cultural, it may be economic. For some students, it's about making money, and some it may be political. They want some kind of power at some point. It may be cultural. So there's all kinds of reasons. But, you know, I teach Native Studies at Foothill High School, which is Native youth who are incarcerated at YDDC and at Camino Nuevo. And I always think to myself, well, you know, where is all of this knowledge going? And I think to myself, well, when they're released, when these students are released into the public, I want them to feel empowered. And I want them to feel that in spite of what's happened and what happened in their childhood to get them to that facility, that they can leave that facility and they can feel empowered and they can feel proud of who they are. Because if you feel proud about yourself, if you have high self-esteem, you're going to do a lot of good things. And sometimes that self-esteem is built culturally. I think about at Taos how we have a lot of young men and young women who participate, and it's beautiful when you see them and they're proud. They're proud of what they do, and they carry that pride with them to school. Mm-hmm. And so I think, like I said, individually, collectively, I think, you know, it's kind of like a Venn diagram. There's some things that overlap, and there's some things that are very specific.
And your thoughts on inspiring and empowering?
Allowing them to grow up and be who they are, and ensuring that they are proud of where they come from. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I go back to a statement that my dad taught me, is that you were born an Indian, you'll die an Indian. What happens between those two points in your life is incumbent upon how you live your life. And we have to be mindful that as we sit around this table, our forefathers, our ancestors, my grandfather and my great-grandfather, those are just two generations ago, were the ones that were taken from their homelands. Their hair was chopped, and they were taught not to speak their native language because it was wrong. Mm-hmm. And here we are now trying to become now re-customed to the Western way of education. And some of us have taken a role to where we had to find our way in doing so. And I do believe that if we can lead by example, like Councilman stated, that if we can lead by example, that we can show that there are identified people and places and experiences that folks have in this state that, yes, they went to a public school system. Yes, they went to college. Yes, they went on to do other things in their lives that were significant. If they can have that example and see that, then our children can say, it doesn't matter if I go to a public school, if I come from a broken home, if I have certain things that statistically I'm not supposed to succeed. The fact is that everybody is capable of success. Every single person, regardless of their ethnicity, social status, their financial capabilities, because at the end of the day, those students need to understand that everybody has a value, that they have a value, and that they are worth something, and that it takes those chance encounters, whether it be on the reservation, on the tribal lands, or their teachers at school, or the administrator, or someone they meet along the way, to just give them that encouragement. And I think if we can share that with our students, and we can show them and lead by example, they'll be more adept to expect success.
And any final thoughts, Juan Ray?
It's better when you give me a question.
Okay. Just adding to just inspiring, empowering Native students to graduate.
Empowering and inspiring them. I'll tell you what, if this is a message to the students and to all the youth out there, you know, I'm looking for future leaders. I'm looking for future people to take on this responsibility, to embody what it is and bring those tools back to who we are as Native American people. That's who I'm looking for. If you want to be a warrior in your community, if you want to be a leader in your community, if you want to stand up for the rights of your community, if you want to make a difference and change the world, I'm looking for you. I'm asking you to start doing it, start making the smallest changes in your life, and add those changes and add them up over a year, add them up over 10 years, add them up over a high school diploma, and those small increments are going to add up to something great, and you're going to be great. So I'm looking for you to be great, and I'm looking for you to come back and be a leader and be educated and to carry on the cultures and the traditions and the language.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Today on Native America Calling, we're talking about high school graduation rates. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, phone lines are open, and the number is 1-800-996-2848. We're going to expand the discussion in the second half and hear from Dr. Daisy Thompson, who is the Director of Indian Education at Albuquerque Public Schools. APS is facing a budget gap of as much as $26 million because of legislative cuts, lower enrollment, and added expenses. The district announced its cutting of all middle school athletics, and that's just the beginning of programs that could be lost if the financial direction remains what it is. We'll discuss what this means for Native American students in this public school system. And you can also join the conversation. Our number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. The outlook is not all pessimistic. There are programs in this population that offer real promise for students, and we'll talk about those too. Maybe you know of a program that's showing positive results for Native students. Call in and share. This program is presented in conjunction with New Mexico PBS in Albuquerque, National Native News, and the American Graduate Public Media Initiative. There's more ahead. Stay tuned. The Woman Who Married a Bear by Standing Rock Sioux Nation author and poet Tiffany Midge is filled with thoughts on Native identity and culture and prompts the readers to celebrate both the simplicity and complexity of our lives. We've put this book in our monthly literary spotlight, and we hope you'll join us for the next Native America Calling.
Yeah. I'm Christy. I'm a truck driver, and I'm on the road a lot. I used to pass the time in my truck smoking cigarettes, but then I got that smoker's cough, and I had severe shortness of breath, and I knew I had to quit. First, I tried e-cigarettes as a way to cut back. I thought cutting down might be enough. And while I smoked less, I never did stop smoking regular cigarettes completely. But then, my lung collapsed, and the doctors had to glue my lung to my chest to keep it from collapsing again. I was only 33 years old. That's when I really quit smoking. Now when I'm on the road, I pass the time eating sunflower seeds. My tip is, if you don't want to have your chest cut open, don't just cut down on cigarettes. Quit completely.
Smoking even a few cigarettes a day is dangerous. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we appreciate you joining us today. If you have a show topic you'd like to share with us, send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. In the first half of the show, we shared a conversation among educators and community leaders about helping Native students make it all the way to graduation. Now is your time to chime in if you'd like to comment on what you heard. Our phone lines are open. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And what more would you like to add? We heard a little bit about what's going on in New Mexico, but what about in your area? What's the situation with students in your family, your community, when it comes to graduation? You can send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us here in Studio 49 is Dr. Daisy Thompson. She's the Director of Indian Education at Albuquerque Public Schools, and she is Diné. It's our pleasure to welcome her to Native America Calling. Dr. Thompson, welcome, and please feel free to further introduce yourself here as we get our conversation started. Go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. I am Daisy Thompson. So I am happy to be here this morning speaking to all of you. And I am born for the Salt Clan. I am of the Red Streak into the Water Clan. And both my maternal and paternal grandparents are the Towering House Clan.
Well, Dr. Thompson, it is our pleasure to be thinking about education alongside with you. And we just heard a conversation among a tribal leader, a state representative, as well as an educator. So you got three different views on taking a look at graduation rates. And one thing that they discussed was success and definitions of it and ways to get there. I think that's one of the highlights that I walked away with hearing that conversation. Dr. Thompson, is there anything you'd like to pick up on what you heard discussed?
Around the area of success, I truly believe that many of our Native American students that I have known over the years, many of them tend to do very well. We just had a graduating seniors banquet last week, and we had 240 students who are on track to graduate next month, and we have 24 pending, which means that they will be graduating as a fifth year, a graduate in the month of July. And so we found out that many Native American students tend to do better if they do the five-year graduation. So there are more who are still on track, but it's going to take them a few weeks longer than the other group to graduate. And so even the state data shows that to be true. So that data tends to be higher, which is the five-year graduation rates, since the state went to that. But in the area of success, many of the students at the banquet talked to us. And the majority of them, I would say, when we heard from all of them that were at the banquet, about 90% of them are planning on going to college. Many of them have been accepted into universities and colleges, and many of them are going to study courses or careers that go into technology, into chemistry, into nursing. Some of them, there was a few of them that said that they would be going into the military. So many of our students are planning beyond graduation, and many of them have scholarships that they have attained. So it's not all dismal. It is positive. And so I have seen that year after year in my years in APS.
Sure. We're truly inspired by the people who we often get to hear from when it talks about that long road to get to graduation. And then it's inspiring to hear that they're looking ahead and seeing a path that they want to pursue. Given that and just understanding there's a lot of good people doing a lot of good work, how do you compare that to the numbers? And we're seeing numbers that say Native students don't always succeed. Graduation rates aren't the same as their counterparts. How do we make sense of this and really figure out about changing things or making sure that we are seeing celebrations of more Native students? Dr. Thompson?
You know, I believe that over the 35 plus years in education as a career, I have heard for the last all those years of my children, myself when I was in school, being told that we were not achieving, that we had low graduation rates, that we have low academic achievement rates, that we have the highest dropout rate, we have the highest truancy rates, and so on and so forth. All of these years. And so if you keep hearing that again and again and again in every educational institution that our children, that my children attend, and people have all of this data, and they keep repeating the same thing to us over and over again. So how do you get out from under all of that? It is all just putting our children down, I believe, that there needs to be a glimmer of a praise, a glimmer of hope. And then our children keep hearing the word at risk. This population are problems. They are hard to deal with. They are at risk. We need to change our vocabulary to at promise. We need to tell our children, our families, that all of our children are at promise, and that we need to begin to speak of ways of how we're going to help our students. Calling them at promise, yes, the data is there, but we need to turn that around with the way we talk about our children and the way we view them, the way we set up the curriculum, the expectations in the classrooms. Speak of them positively, because every single child has the capability. I believe that they all can succeed.
Certainly. Folks, we want you to join this conversation. Something I jotted down listening to that conversation and a question I wanted to put out there, and I think you gave your statement on it, of what do we need to do to get our kids to start expecting success? And folks, let's have you answer that. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your voice here on our Native airwaves. Let's go ahead and hear what people are thinking. We're going to say hi to Beverly in Warm Springs, Oregon, listening on KWSO. Beverly, thank you for your call, and go ahead, share your thoughts.
I just have a comment. Years ago when my son was in school, he said he'd raise his hand. I'm going to go outside. Wait.
And while she's doing that, folks, let me give out the number one more time. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Or you can send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And if you're finding this program in our archives, there's still opportunity to comment. You can go to our website, leave your comment directly. Our website is 1-800-996-2848. Let's see if Beverly got outside. Beverly, are you there?
Well, I'm here. When my son was in school, he said he'd raise his hand, you know, to answer a question. And the teacher never called on him. He'd sit there right in the front and trying to, I want to answer a question, and she never picks me. And he got frustrated, and he kind of, this was before cell phones. And my job required me to travel, so I didn't know about it till much later. And
you know, Beverly, students feeling comfortable in their environment, a lot of times is something that we don't talk about. And the situation you're explaining, I'm wondering how that factors into all of this when we talk about success in our schools. And Dr. Thompson, what about our school environments, or if students don't feel like the teacher gets them, or they don't feel comfortable in saying, you know, this student that Beverly was talking about, saying, hey, why aren't you calling on me? Or they keep it to themselves, and then they deal with that stress. Talk to me about this relationship that students have, feeling comfortable to get to that success.
You know, oftentimes our teachers, when they come into the classrooms or when they come to teach in our Native American communities or even in classrooms when they have Native American children, they come with their own values, their own value system. And there is a clash with the value system that our Native American children could bring to the school, to the classroom. And so what children need and what they look for are teachers with affective type of characteristics. Those are teachers who give them the wait time to respond to questions. Those are teachers who take that extra effort to call on them, to discuss things with them, to show them examples of whatever topics and subjects that they are referring to. And they give a chance, and they value what the children bring into the classroom, into the school. They begin to see that our children don't come empty into the classrooms, that they come with a wealth of knowledge also. So the teachers need to learn to use how to tap into these wealth of knowledge that our children bring into the classroom with them.
And what they bring into their classroom a lot of times relates to a whole community. We heard a couple of the folks on the panel earlier talking about CORES. And it was interesting to hear that Representative Lenti described it as starting from the family and then branching out into the community and then going out into the system of education. We also heard Councilman Abeda talk about this and even wanting to repair the core even before we get, you know, into that bigger circle of the family. And so our Native students, they bring these kind of teachings. They bring this kind of understanding of how they connect to the world. And so how do we respect a community, individuals, tribes, and in this kind of thinking and making space for it, even in public education or in an urban setting? Dr. Thompson, do you think about this, and what are your thoughts?
What the some of the teachers that I have encountered and some stories that I've heard from teachers is that those teachers who experience success in the classrooms are those teachers who go out and do home visits themselves. A lot of times when there are parent-teacher conferences, many of these teachers turn that around and they go out to the homes. They go out into the communities. They get involved with the community activities where their students come from. And they begin to experience that culture that they get an opportunity to converse with people. They get to know people. They start bringing various leaders into their classrooms to speak with their students. And many of these people also bring a wealth of knowledge with them.
Thank you for that. We're going to go to our phone lines again, folks. If you'd like to share something about what it takes to bring success to our Native students, to introduce them to a path where they are graduating on time. What does it take? What kind of support is needed? What kind of support is missing? And what levels do we have to take things to? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. All are welcome. Educators, if you're in the audience, what are your thoughts on this? Tribal leaders, students, we want to hear from you too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to say hi to Marion in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening today on KUNM. Marion, thank you for your call, and go ahead, you're on air.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the topic. I'm 63. I'm not that old, but I'm not really young either, and I've worked in the public schools on and off the reservations in Washington and Santa Fe and Albuquerque. And I was charged to work with at-risk students that were Native American, and I found that the problem was they couldn't read. Whether they were in elementary, high school, they couldn't read, and that was the key to their success. A lot of them were ashamed to admit it. It was hard to make them realize that they needed to be honest and get help that way. And so a lot of times when I was even a tutor, I would spend my time helping them learn how to read. And you should see the light in their eyes. Their eyes would open up, and it was just like a miracle to them. And I think that's the basic thing. You know, we have all kinds of different classes. We want them to go to college, but they can't go if they can't read.
You know, Marion, when you think of college, it is all about reading chapters after chapters. And, you know, how do we make that useful? Marion, thank you for your call here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. 1-800-996-2848 is a number if you'd also like to add your voice. Dr. Thompson, maybe a bigger question in talking about getting students to succeed is figuring out what their needs are and what we need to focus in on. Marion suggested reading is a key in making sure our students have this skill. Earlier, we heard about a bill that was vetoed in New Mexico, House Bill 484, by Representative Lenti. He talked about also identifying what priorities that need to be, boosted either through our paying attention to it or funding it. And his answer was reallocating federal funding to Native students. And you know a lot about that. What do you think about these kind of approaches of identifying what the true needs are of specifically our Native students and then figuring out a way to help them? Dr. Thompson?
I agree with that. We need to really begin to examine the data from each individual child, because that data shows us their skill set, what they know, and what they need help with. And these children that are at promise, we need to develop a curriculum that they will be motivated to. And it's about their history, literature that contains their history, stories about animals, stories about the environment, the sky, the universe. Those are things that people or our students they tend to motivate towards that, towards those topics where they feel that their heritage, their culture, their language, who they are is valued, and they tend to that. And so we have in Albuquerque Public Schools from our department, we have teachers who go out in the elementary schools where there is high enrollment of Native American children. They take intervention. We do intervention classes using Native American culturally relevant curriculum in reading, literature, and also mathematics. And we also found out that children don't like they are holistic learners. They don't like their subjects being taken apart. Like oftentimes our education systems are set up like, now you're going to math class. Now here is your English class or your science class. Many of our students are holistic learners. They want to take one topic and study all of these content areas across curriculum. And so when we begin to piecemeal it for them, they kind of get lost in that and their motivation is lost. And so several years ago, we did focus groups with students, and many of them told us that. And the other thing that they are drawn to are field trips. There is nothing like field trips for them to get them turned on to reading and doing that research and doing that writing about that trip to, say, like Chaco Canyon. These type of things really motivate them, and it turns them on to science, to history, to research, to everything that is taught in the schools, even mathematics.
And with that said, what about when some of that is challenged? You talk about, highlighting and making sure our cultures are valued. But what about when it's the atmosphere where our cultures are made fun of, or you have even other students, or issues with mascots, or people saying we wear costumes as Native people? What about when we have those kind of environments?
We need to continue to educate educators and the educational institutions about those topics. We need to utilize our tribal leaders. And there are treaties from many, many years ago. There are agreements. In the state of New Mexico, we have the New Mexico Indian Education Act that speaks to that. We need to utilize our tribal leaders to come and do a lot of that education with the educational institutions so that we can cut down on that. Because in the New Mexico Indian Education Act, it talks about having this partnership and having schools adhere to many of those policies that are outlined in there. But you will find that many educators don't even know that such an act exists in New Mexico. So we as Native people, Native leaders, we need to do a better job of getting the word out to all the educational institutions and also to families and to students that such an act exists.
All right, thank you for that. Let's take another call. We're going to say hi to Emily in Rockfoot, Idaho, tuned in on KISU. Emily, what are you thinking?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to relate some experience I had with the local school district and with Native students. I worked as a reporter for the local newspaper and also for the tribal newspaper. When my youngest son graduated from high school, they had the Johnson O'Malley program had a banquet for the Native students. So we went to that, and one boy at the end who got up to, they asked him to read the Lord's Prayer. He couldn't even read. The superintendent of the school district was sitting in the very room with him. Another time, and I was interviewing another boy, a man who was making bows and arrows in the old way. I said, you graduated from high school? He said, no, I was in the sixth grade and I couldn't read or write, so I dropped out and got a job.
And so, Emily, with all this experience and what you witnessed, what do you want to say about maybe even getting to a point where we don't have to hear stories of people not graduating?
Why would they want to sit in a schoolroom for 12 years not understanding a thing that was going on around them? One of the persons on the reservation, Maxine Edmo, who worked to get a school on the reservation, told the school board at one meeting I was attending that she was in the seventh grade before she ever realized what was going on around her. She didn't speak English. They made no attempt to teach these children.
Emily, this is an example of what maybe some of the people who are raising students, that they understood school to be a place where they don't understand you, to be a place where they don't speak your language. And I wonder how much of that funnels into the way we encourage our students, or if there are things we, as the ones who are raising them, also need to think about, and just how different things are, or how they're just the same. So I guess I'm asking for advice for parents and in being that support. Or it's not always parents. Sometimes it's grandparents. Sometimes it's sisters and brothers who are raising people who are going through High School. Dr. Thompson, time for advice, your thoughts, encouragement to parents. Go ahead.
You know, listening to this last caller, it is a form of racism when you set up a child to fail. So in that instance, I hear that that child was set up to fail when he couldn't read. How do you think, what do you think happened to his self-esteem and self-confidence in that? Because when people are blaming the Native American child or Native Americans as the big problems, but not taking responsibility for helping solve the problems, then that's a form of racism that is going on, and it has been going on for many, many years. Because when you look at a basketball coach, he coaches his team to do well and perform well at games and to win championships. Why can't we have the same expectations for our teachers? When they go into a classroom, no matter how little that child, why can't we have the same expectations that our children are winners and that they're going to be champions when they graduate and even beyond graduation? And so I have that attitude. And so as parents, as community leaders, community members, we need to view our children as children of promise.
I think that's a great way to wrap up this conversation here today. Folks, that's going to do it for our conversation. Thank you to our guest, Dr. Daisy Thompson. Also, thanks to producer Sarah Gustavus and the crew at New Mexico PBS and National Native News anchor Antonia Gonzalez for adding their thoughts to this hour. Thanks to New Mexico In Focus and their panel of guests, Dr. Glenaba Martinez, New Mexico Representative Derek J. Lenti, Isleta Pueblo Councilman Juan Ray Abeda. We're back again tomorrow with our April Book of the Month with Hunkpapa Lakota poet Tiffany Midge. Thanks to the Native America Calling crew, executive producer Art Hughes, senior producer Monica Brain, associate producer Andy Murphy, and engineer Derek Toledo. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. Thanks again for joining us, and visit us online, NativeAmericaCalling.com.
Da nauluk saitlhat kuyak luku ilauluki insurance samun mut sutmun mai aprilami insurance at ikayugut mikelngut naulun ritlhkaitnun nunatlu pinilhkaitnun nasun rivzera kwani www.medicaid.gov kwallu kaya gogluku 1-800-318-2596 a message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com. Support by Amerind Media Group, offering compelling and entertaining films, TV series, and documentaries about the indigenous peoples from around the world. We are honored to share their cultures, traditions, and stories online with a no-charge trial at nativeflix.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.